there has been a growing trend in clinical studies that makes the case that a large percentage of artists, including performers, writers, and fine artists, have some kind of mental illness. You can say that without laughing. It's so terrible.
It's terrible, but maybe true. But that doesn't mean that we have to be starving artists.
Podcast. Today you are here with Catherine Moore and Sky Becker Yamakawa. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Sky.
So tell me, what have you been working on?
Well, this week I'm actually working from my mother's house. She actually just had knee surgery, so I've taken my art supplies and moved them to her house.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can be here to help with anything she needs around the house while she's recovering from knee surgeries. I'm gearing up. I'm kind of finishing up my sketches, working on a piece for a WowXWow show called Cornucopia. It's basically open theme, so I'm gonna kind of be doing a little figurative, kind of mystical type of stuff that I normally do. But
Okay.
I'm still kind of working on the sketch, and then I'm gonna start painting it next week.
Cool. That sounds good.
Yeah. So how about you? What are you doing?
I'm trying to finish up some larger commissioned pieces that I was working on. The client has been very generous with a timeline. I've been taking my time. There's two of them, so I'm trying to get one of them finished up and varnished and prepared for them. Yeah, that's what I've been working on.
Cool.
So we will be right back to talk about the starving artist trope. Hello and welcome back. Today we are talking about the starving artist trope. Catherine, so I came across this article and I just couldn't resist. It was in Forbes and it was called The Truth About Starving Artists and How You Can Avoid This Trap by Celine DaCosta.
Nice. Let's learn about
Let's learn about it. Right.
it.
Yeah, because when I went to college, I was going to be an art major. My mom was like, "You're going to be a starving artist." Oh no. So this is always
Right.
like echoing out there in the art arena. So first, let's define what is a starving artist, because like some of our other topics, it's a little surprising how it's actually defined. They said a starving artist is someone involved in creative pursuits who disregards anything else for the sake of their chosen art. Every ounce of their resources, it's very dramatic,
Yes.
is spent on futuring their creative careers. So, does that mean if you are an artist and a parent who takes care of your child, does this disqualify you from?
It sounds like it disqualifies you from being a starving artist. My other problem with that is that, so to be an artist, I must be starving.
Right,
You know, it's
that was
like,
another right.
right. I
It
was
was really
like, wait a
confusing. Was
minute.
that, and it goes into more of this. We'll talk about it, but like, if an artist takes a commission job, are they disqualified from the starving artist? You're not a real artist if you do that.
Well, I guess that's the question, right? It's like, so to be an artist, do you have to be a starving artist, or can you just be an artist? Because I would rather just be an artist that doesn't starve. I
I would prefer not to have,
would
as
prefer
they called,
not to
lettuce
be
soup for
starving.
my family.
Exactly.
Was like, lettuce soup? Do they mean cabbage? I
Like,
don't.
can we please eat?
Right.
Pay rent? It'd be
Right.
nice.
And then the other thing was, if you work another job and you also do your art, that means you're no longer considered a starving artist.
Right,
Your
which I
art might
think
be
is
starving,
fine.
but you
Your
still have food
art
to
might
eat.
be starting. Right. And I think, you know, we've kind of touched on this several different episodes before, but it's about knowing your worth, getting paid for what you're worth. And if you have to have another job, that's okay.
In the late 18th and early 19th century, I guess when this term, the starving artist, started to float around, there was this overwhelming belief that art should be done for art's sake. that it must be made without serving any other motives than the simple pursuit of art.
So this is, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it. So this is really like a knife in the gut for anyone that wants to do commercial art.
Right.
Yeah, you're not an artist. Well, see, and this goes back to, you know, especially if I'm looking at the 18th and 19th centuries, it wasn't even until that long ago, illustration was, you are not an artist. You just do commercial
that's true.
art. Yeah. So there's this definite divide. That's interesting, but let's continue. Let's see what else we can find out from this article.
Yeah, well, and I also think that this statement that art has to be for art's sake, I think that's also why we deal with this people asking you to explain everything in your painting, and everything in your painting must have this extraordinary, symbolic, earth-shattering meaning, right? Nothing could be there because you just thought it would be cool to add a reflection in what something metallic in your painting, or, you know, whatever it may be. Because whenever we talk with any artist who admit to painting something just for fun, you can always hear this like little sheepish guilt of, I just wanted to paint it because it was fun.
Right. I did something for me for once. Yeah. I wonder if this also ties into, you know, what we talked about not too long ago was the passion wages, right?
Right.
If we're supposed to be artists who do art for art's sake, if people believe that, they're like, oh, well, you do art anyway. And it's for art's sake, not to turn a profit of any sort. So why should I pay you this amount of money?
And so adding to this fact that some of the most successful artists are actually wealth deprived, and you know who we're going to bring up, Van Gogh.
That's right.
One of the most accomplished painters in history could be considered the epitome of the starving artist. He died unknown and struggled with the physical and mental health. It is hard to judge that he is best known for cutting off his ear or painting Starry Night. So I think he sold one painting in his lifetime. So then the next question is, why does this trope exists and how did it come to be? Over the past couple of decades, there has been a growing trend in clinical studies that makes the case that a large percentage of artists, including performers, writers, and fine artists, have some kind of mental illness. You can say that without laughing. It's so terrible.
It's terrible, but maybe true, but that doesn't mean that we have to be starving artists.
Right. It's just so terrible. So what happened in the article now, what for me was the writer started to get a little confused with a tortured artist versus a starving artist.
Okay.
And she kind of went off on a tangent. So they say Shelley Carson, a lecturer at Harvard University, claims that substance abuse, bipolar disorder, and depression are some of the most common symptoms found among artists. So it got to be one of those three, I guess.
I guess. Well, what's interesting is that I don't know about you, but most artists I know, in fact, you're the only one that I don't quite know yet, but every artist that I personally know has either depression or anxiety or both.
Really?
Every one of them.
Huh. Okay. So now you're saying there's some truth to that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I said there may be truth to that.
Huh.
However, that doesn't mean we don't deserve to be paid.
Right.
Doesn't mean that we have to starve. But yeah.
So they said the link between art and mental problems has become a topic that's institutionally recognized and has sprung up an entire series of conferences called Creativity and Madness by Dr. Barry Panter.
Okay.
This is just getting worse. In 2009, a Hungarian researcher named, I'm just going to say Carrie, so don't butcher it too bad, in the Department of Psychiatry and Psychotherapy in Budapest stated that genetic polymorphisms related to mental disorders were more likely to be found among people with the highest creative thinking scores. Yeah, so it's really getting into the science.
Right.
The starving artist trope has been passed down for generations, and it does nothing but disempower artists trying to promote their work. It also keeps many talented artists from chasing their dreams due to the fear of not being able to provide for themselves and their family later in life. So I thought that was valuable.
Right.
It is very disempowering.
It is.
And it makes people not want to major in art when they go to college.
When you have that, I think a lot of people, especially younger artists, think, well, I have to be a starving artist before I can make any money at all. And I don't think that's true. I think that you have to value yourself and your skills wherever you are in your career, even if you're just starting out. And I see a lot of young artists that when they're first out of school or if they're self-taught, when they feel like they're ready to start, and they're just like, oh, yeah, I'll do this for you for free. Or I'll take $20, even though it costs them three times that amount to create a piece or something. So it's not knowing your value and not demanding that people get your value. And they think, well, this is how it's supposed to be because of the whole starving artist situation.
I would agree. I don't think artists should feel like they have to be a starving artist before they get to be a successful artist or
Right.
a surviving artist. But I do think that artists should be aware that they are going to have a lot of rejection.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that. It said, how to avoid starving artist syndrome. So, one, it said, don't demonize commercial work, reject the idea that producing work that's commercial means selling your soul. So it's okay to do illustrations and still be an artist.
Right. Yes, it
It's
is.
okay.
I'm here to tell you, it's totally okay. That pays the bills.
Number two, focus on the bigger picture. Treat your art career as a business. Market yourself, connections, and networking. So there's that dirty word of marketing.
It's
Which, a lot of artists think, oh, I just need to lock myself in my studio and paint. I shouldn't have to, or I don't need to market myself.
yeah, it's like, well, I guess you can do that, but then no one's going to see the work. And part of the things like we've talked about before is art is about connecting with other people, the viewers and stuff like that. So you're not going to do that if you're just holed up in a room and no one's seeing your work. I think that's great for practice if that's, you're trying to get better. But if you want to be, a successful artist, you got to come out of the studio and you got to do the marketing. It's not my
Right.
favorite part of the job either,
It
but that is part of the job.
is. Well, they're saying, it's a business. You have to treat it as a business. And that means not just the production part of the business.
Right, exactly.
So, number three, get used to rejection. That's definitely like you might not be
Yep.
starving, but you will be rejected.
You will be rejected multiple times.
Right. That could make you go crazy.
It could. It could. Yeah, I think was asked this of a young artist like some time ago, and they were talking about that, and they just, oh, I can't deal with rejection. And I'm just like, you want to get into this game, you need a thicker skin because it's going to happen.
It is. It
It is
is.
going to happen multiple times, and you just gotta keep on moving.
Right. It's as an artist, you need to accept rejection for what they are, a part of the process. If you're not getting enough rejections, it's likely you're not exposing yourself to enough new opportunities.
Yeah, there are some artists out there. Shane was one of them, but he would post rejection letters online and kind of celebrate them. If you celebrate the rejection letters, because one,
Okay.
it kind of shows that you're willing to put yourself out there and know that you need to keep going.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I mean, I know it's hard because you don't want to necessarily show yourself to your audience in a negative light.
Right.
But I love that he did that because it is so hard as an artist when you get rejection after rejection.
Right,
You're just like,
you
what is
have, yeah,
wrong?
you have to celebrate the failures because through the failures is how you learn and how you grow. I think it's important to do that, but you also have to expect it to come out and go, well, that didn't work. I'm done. Yeah.
And then the last one is art is subjective, and so is your appeal. It's impossible to please everyone in the real world, which is very valuable advice and true. Sometimes it's hard to fully accept that.
Yeah. It's also impossible to maybe even more so to please everyone in the virtual world.
Right. No, it's true. You have to find your market, especially if it's your business. And then try to appeal to your market. Like we've had other guests who do more fantasy art, they're not going to be appealing to people who appreciate landscapes.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it was all excellent advice. So, okay, well, we will be right back with art news. Hello and welcome back. Today we have our art news segment. We're going to be doing a follow-up to the whole Basquiat scandal at the Orlando Museum. Did you hear about this, Catherine?
I did. I remember when we talked about it a while back, and I saw, you'll probably be able to explain it a little bit more because I did see a little follow-up that came out, like a little article, and I started reading it, but I didn't get a chance to finish it. So I'm really excited that we're talking about it today because I'm fascinated by this whole
Right,
debacle. Yeah.
right. So just a quick refresh that they had this special Basquiat exhibit in the Orlando Museum of Modern Art, and it was very exciting. They had, I think, 25 pieces that were never seen before because they were found in an abandoned storage unit from this famous TV or movie producer, and they were on cardboard FedEx boxes, and FedEx said, "We didn't use that logo until a time period after Basquiat had already died." So they were in question as to whether they were fake. And the museum swore up and down, left and right, "They're not fake. They're real. They're real. We know they are. We had a Basquiat expert. We had this other expert." I guess the head of the museum said, "They're absolutely real and we stand by it." And because of that exhibit, I think they had like a ridiculous amount of attendees, right, who showed up for the exhibit because they wanted to see these possibly fake Basquiat pieces. So it was a huge boom. So there was a follow-up. I guess they will reevaluate all the shows planned, and they ousted the director at that time because they think they were fake. According to a statement from the museum, the board and staff are currently reevaluating all exhibitions planned by the former director and CEO, Aaron DeGroft. The museum has canceled the next three exhibitions planned by DeGroft, and I'm really curious to know what those exhibitions were. Who was fired by the Board of Trustees on June 28th, 4 days after the FBI seized the contents of the Heroes and Monsters, an exhibition of 25 painting slabs of cardboard attributed to Basquiat. That's a great title for a show, by the way, Heroes and
Oh, yeah,
Monsters.
for sure. Yeah.
So he allegedly sold the work directly to the now deceased television writer Thad Mumford for $5,000, who had them in a storage unit sitting there. And the storage unit wasn't paid and they auctioned it off. The FBI did an interview and they interviewed the art crime team, interviewed Mumford, who claimed to have never met Basquiat. The whole story was fiction.
Weird.
Yeah.
So who made up the story?
I don't know. But then it goes on to say that one of the experts, it was a woman, that she was paid Jordana Moore, Sagis, a professor of art at the University of Maryland. She was paid $60,000 for her compensation on the report that she wrote about it, the artwork being legitimate. And I was kind of confused here. I felt like the article implied that $60,000 was like hush money, like it was too much for her to be paid for that. And then she said that she wanted her name left off the exhibit. She didn't want to be associated with it. So she said, I'm out. I'm done." So after that, they said, "Okay, you are out." The director. The unraveling of the Basquiat exhibition has created a crisis at the OMA with its reputation and philanthropic backing at risk. According to the New York Times, a half a dozen OMA donors and are considering shifting their financial support to the nearby Rollins Museum of Art, while the Martin Anderson Garcia Anderson Foundation has announced plans to move its prized collection of 18th and 19th century American paintings to the Rollins.
Well, good job, Rollins.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Wow.
that
So
was
this is
kind of
a
crazy.
total cluster beep for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Man.
That I can't imagine. Yeah.
I don't know, right? And the fact that there's an FBI unit, the art crime team.
Yeah, I know. It's like when I was reading that, it was like, oh, there's an art crime team. That's fabulous.
I want to see a
I want
movie.
to be an agent for the art crime team.
Right. I want to see a movie about the art crime team and the
Me
crimes they
too. Do they wear smocks?
Right. Are they like
Got
CSI?
paint all
They
over them. Yeah.
with a like a big bag or box with all their
Right.
tools.
Have their tools
Black
carrying like a
light.
big art bag. Yeah.
Right. So that was cool. So as Basquiat once said, most young kings get their heads cut off. So okay, well, where can we find you online, Catherine?
You can find me at tncanvas.com for my website, and you can find me on social media on Instagram and Facebook at tncanvas.
Great. And I am at skiesart.com as well as Skies Art Shop on Instagram. And you also can find Off the Isla Podcast on Instagram. Please follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to it. And thank you for listening. Stay safe and happy
Happy
creating.
creating.